Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. It's part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. I'm Joel Katz, and joining me once again, a repeat performance by Dr. Aziz Merchant, professor of surgery and bariatric surgeon at Hackensack Meridian Health Network and at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Joel. Thank you for having me on again. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Let's talk about why someone would need bariatric surgery, or at what point. How do you determine when they are at a point where they need surgery or could need surgery?
So that's a great basic fundamental question. That's very important. I think that when people think about answering this question for themselves, one important sort of piece of math that they need to do right off the bat is figuring out what is called their body mass index. And the body mass index is, the way to think about it is that it's sort of a formula that corrects your weight for your height. So as an example, if I say to you, I've got someone who is 200 pounds, that's a 200-pound person that could be morbidly obese or could be not morbidly obese. And so if that 200-pound person was a 6'3" linebacker for a football team, their BMI would be 25, so they would not be morbidly obese.
That's exactly what I am. I'm not a linebacker, but that's my I'm just under 200, and I'm between 6'3" and 6'4". So you're saying that my BMI would be 25.
Exactly. Now, if we took you and took a foot off of your height and made you 5'3", but at the same weight of 200 pounds, your body mass index would now be 35,
sure,
and you would be morbidly obese. So it's really important to factor the height in, and the way to do that is with something called the body mass index. And the reason that number is so important is because that is the most important piece of information that insurance companies will use to determine whether or not they will authorize for you to have bariatric surgery. The other piece of that equation, in addition to having a body mass, so you need a body mass index of greater than 35.
Okay.
As a starting point. The other part of that equation, if you will, is that you also then need a medical condition that is exacerbated by the obesity. So the number one thing that comes to mind would be diabetes.
Okay.
There's also high blood pressure, sleep apnea. There's reflux disease. There can be severe arthritis, degenerative arthritis of the spine and the joints, especially if you're someone who needs orthopedic surgery to have that fixed, and you can't have the surgery because of your weight. So there's a number of medical conditions. So purely in terms of basic sort of getting an insurance authorization for the surgery, the three things we need to demonstrate would be a body mass index above 35, additional medical problems related to the obesity, and an inability to lose the weight through traditional means after having tried very hard. So diet, exercise, supervision by a dietitian, and so on.
So you don't jump right to the surgery when someone comes to visit you. We would have to go through all these checks and balances to see if it is, obviously, to see if it's the right thing for this person. But it's not just, okay, you're 400 pounds, we're definitely doing the bariatric surgery as soon as possible.
No, actually, it's those three things that I mentioned are a minimum baseline of what we need. We, obviously, you need to meet the body mass index. If you're 400 pounds, unless you're, 8 feet tall, you're probably going to meet the BMI index. Many people with that BMI also have medical problems. So you probably will check two out of the multiple boxes. But then there's the thing that I look for. Do you have the commitment to lose the weight, right? Are you someone who will make the behavioral changes? For example, if you've already tried doing the dieting and the exercise, then obviously you're someone who's willing to make that commitment. But if you've never tried any of that once in your life, and you come to have bariatric surgery because you believe it's quote unquote the easy way out, then I don't think you're somebody that would benefit from that, right? You have to have a commitment to the process And what I tell people, and I emphasize this when I give seminars to patients, is that bariatric surgery is not the easy way out, right? It is actually, it actually involves a significant amount of commitment mm-hmm. and time. And, you know, if I may just use an analogy, when I talk about bariatric surgery, what I tell patients is that to think of bariatric surgery as kind of a rocket booster for weight loss. So what I mean by that is, you know, let's say you have someone who is, you know, morbidly obese, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they are, you know, trying to lose weight through diet and exercise. The typical way that that goes for most people is you make some changes to your diet. Maybe you go on a specific dietary plan, or maybe you suddenly go on this, binge of, you know, running or you know, going to the gym. Mm-hmm. And there's a weight loss. There's a 20, maybe 30-pound weight loss at some point. But it's, you know, after a while, then it sort of plateaus, and then maybe you gain your weight back because you kind of fall off the wagon a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes up and down for a very long period of time. And then at some point during that up and down, you just sort of lose motivation, and then you're done. And that's sort of a typical story of somebody of a very high weight who's trying to lose the weight. And we have scientific studies that actually show the patients with a higher BMI, above 35 or 40, actually are not able to lose the weight consistently and maintain that weight off just with diet and exercise. So what bariatric surgery does is it sort of adds a bit of rocket fuel to that process, because after bariatric surgery, for the first 6 to 8 months, you do rapidly lose a lot of weight. And that puts you almost in a different weight category very quickly. And then the idea is that that feeds into sort of a psychological and behavioral motivation to continue that weight loss. Because now you sort of know, God, this is what it feels like to be 50, 70, 80 pounds lighter.
Right.
This is great. I'm going to go with this. I'm going to keep pushing along. I'm going to keep, you know, exercising, and my life is going to turn around. And that's sort of the idea behind bariatric surgery.
So when someone has bariatric surgery, they need to understand that it's not just you have the surgery and then you could just keep eating whatever you want, because I had the surgery and I could do whatever I want. You still are put on a nutrition and a proper diet after the surgery that you need to stick to. When you say you gain the weight, lose the weight, can you gain it all back even after the surgery because you're reckless in your choices?
Yes, 100%. And we see patients do that, where they haven't had the proper pre-surgical counseling, and maybe haven't even had the proper post-surgical counseling, or maybe they have had it and they just have not adhered to the principles and the guidelines that their surgeon and their dietitian have laid out for them. And basically they're not sort of quote unquote following the rules, if you will, of, you know, eating properly and exercising after weight loss surgery. Another way to think of weight loss surgery is it's basically, a toolbox, right? We are giving you a toolbox, but you now need to use the toolbox properly, right? The tools aren't going to build the house themselves, right? You've got to build it. You've got to use the tools, and you've got to build it properly.
And that's a good analogy there. So if you give me everything I need to build a house, that doesn't mean it's going to get built. I need to participate in it.
Exactly. And if you don't participate properly, you could gain the weight back in as little as a year. Some people gain the weight back over 3 or 4 years. And you know, we see those patients, you know, in my office, people who've had bariatric surgery before somewhere else and have come back with, you know, with increased weight.
But the surgery does suppress appetite, correct?
100%. The way it does it is through a couple of mechanisms. The first mechanism and the most common mechanism is called restriction. So the stomach, in either type of bariatric surgery that you have, is decreased in size. The stomach that is used to receive the food and digest the food is decreased in size significantly. And that's called restriction. So it restricts how much you can eat. And so you feel full a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. There's also something called malabsorption, which is basically because we take out a large part of your stomach, and in certain surgeries we reroute your intestines, you absorb less of what you eat. So it's kind of a 1-2 punch. You eat less because you get full quicker, and you absorb less of what you eat. And because of that, there's a fairly rapid weight loss after bariatric surgery.
Talking with Dr. Aziz Merchant, professor of surgery, bariatric surgeon at Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center in Edison. I want to ask you a strange question, and this is just a hypothetical because, you know, we talked about you need to be at least at a BMI of 35. But let's talk from a safety standpoint. Forget about, you know, insurance improving it. What if, and this is never going to happen, I understand that, someone with a BMI of 25 gets this surgery?
There is a significant pool of scientific data out there that patients under the BMI of 35 who have diabetes and other medical problems can still benefit from bariatric surgery with weight loss, and many of their medical problems get better or even go away. And in some countries, they are doing procedures like this for patients with a BMI lower than 35. I don't know if they are all the way around 25. Part of the reason that we here are doing it above 35 is because that's sort of what the Medicare guidelines are right now, and that's what that's the cutoff for insurance. So if you came to somebody with a BMI of, let's say, 33, and you had, you know, significant diabetes, and you and the surgeon felt that you may benefit from bariatric surgery, I don't know off the top of my head if there is someone, a bariatric surgeon, that would do that procedure, and if they would, whether it would have to be sort of a cash pay type situation.
That's what I would think. Like, if someone has the money and they just, I want to lose a couple of pounds, I really want to do this, I just want to know if there's any safety. I don't think it would be done. I don't believe that any doctor would do that. Well, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm just wondering if there's a health issue there where that could be very harmful to the patient. And the reason I ask is I just want to get an idea of, you know, how safe the surgery is. If it's safe at 20 or 25, then, you know, we already know it's safe at 35 because it's necessary.
Right.
You know, I said it was a weird question. So there you go.
Well, but it's actually a very, believe it or not, it's a very good question because, again, I think that even though as a group of bariatric surgeons in this country, we know that we are restricted to BMIs over 35 from the perspective of insurance authorization, I do believe that there is a fairly large group of us that do believe that patients under a BMI of 35, between 30 and 35, which is referred to as class 1 obesity, who have diabetes and high blood pressure, there is data out there that they can benefit from bariatric surgery and that it is safe for them. The other thing I would bring into the equation, Joel, which we are now in the midst of, is the availability of anti-obesity medication. You know, for patients, at least in the United States, who are under a BMI of 35, who are still obese and have diabetes and high blood pressure, just from a medical standpoint, they would be very good candidates for anti-obesity medication, assuming that, you know, there was no other contraindication or medication side effect from something else. But in general, they would be a good candidate for that type of medication. The barriers to that, number one, are, many insurances don't pay for those medications. And the availability of those medications in general, because, pharmacies and companies are running out of them. So they're becoming harder and harder to find.
Why do insurance companies, if it's for the health of a human being, or in this case, their client, why do they reject these medications? Is that a tough one to answer?
I guess the difficulty in answering that question is I don't truly, honestly, fully understand how insurance companies 100% work, right? I'd be remiss if I started speculating about how insurance companies work and what higher level corporate decisions go into deciding, you know, which drugs and procedures and healthcare they're going to pay for and which they're not. Just on the surface, I believe that many insurance companies follow sort of the kinds of rules that are laid out by Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I know that Medicare does not cover those medications. And maybe you can educate me here a little bit. That, I think, is more of a government-related issue in the sense of what the government decides what Medicare is going to cover and not cover. So I would anticipate that if the government decided that Medicare and maybe Medicaid would cover these medications, that I would imagine that insurance companies may follow suit. But I don't know for sure if that would happen. I think the other thing is that comes into this equation is the price of medications,
mm-hmm.
right? These are expensive on the market right now. And to a year's worth of some of these medications can run upwards of $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, $20,000. Bariatric surgery is also, theoretically speaking, expensive when you add in all the hospital charges and
sure.
everything that go out. But that's a one-time upfront, once expense, right? Whereas the medications is year-after-year expense. And there's some pretty solid data that if you stop taking the medications, you can actually gain a good amount of your weight back. So the medications are sort of in perpetuity, if you will, in terms of taking them. So I think there's a number of factors that go into this. I don't fully know the business side of things when it comes to insurance companies. I feel like if I learn more about it, I'll just get more depressed.
Okay, we'll leave it right there. We'll leave it right there. Let's talk about the risk. What somebody who is BMI above 35 and maybe has diabetes or any of the other things you mentioned, high blood pressure, whatever, sleep apnea.
Right.
What's the risk in this surgery? And I'm guessing you're going to tell me it depends on the patient.
Well, so yes and no. There are some standard risks that operations can cause. So anytime we do any type of surgery on a human being, there's always a risk of bleeding and there's risks of infection. With respect to bariatric surgery, most bariatric surgical procedures are what we call stapled procedures. In other words, there's a, you know, we're disconnecting and or possibly reconnecting something, right? So in a procedure called a sleeve gastrectomy, we're disconnecting 80% of the stomach, 85% of the stomach, and leaving you with basically a tubular or a sleeve-like stomach as opposed to a ball of the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And we're using a stapling device that sort of cuts and staples off the rest of the stomach. When you do a gastric bypass, you're doing something similar where you're making the stomach much, much smaller into a pouch, and then you're rerouting the intestines and changing the intestinal highway, if you will. But in order to do that, you're cutting and reattaching things.
Mm.
So whenever you do that, you create something called a staple or a suture line or a connection. And when you're connecting, you know, like as in if you use the analogy of plumbing, if you have a plumber come in and cut pipes and reconnect pipes, one of the first things they're going to want to look at is whether or not that connection leaks. And that's the same concept in surgery, where we want to make sure that this new area that we've stapled off or reconnected doesn't leak. So that's one of the risks of surgery is something we call a leak, where contents from the inside of the intestine can leak out through the connection that was just made.
Hmm.
There's patients who have surgery, and especially patients who are obese who have surgery, are at high risk for certain conditions, such as getting blood clots in their legs, heart and lung problems that can occur after surgery. what I tell people is that the overall risk of having this surgery, the overall risk percentage-wise, is fairly low, but it's not zero, right, as okay. with anything in life. And so those are sort of the main things that you would worry about, immediate risks in surgery.
Okay. I mean, it's safe to say that, I mean, everybody knows any surgery, the most simplistic of surgeries is there is risk involved. But this seems to be one of the surgeries that has the least amount, which you just touched on.
Right, right. And what I tell people is that, you know, the overall risk of bariatric surgery is on par with just about any other sort of major operation you're having, whether it's surgery for colon cancer, surgery for your liver, surgery for, you know, brain surgery, you know, heart surgery. I mean, these are all sort of in the same category of risk, generally speaking.
All right. Before we wrap it up, could you just say what, once a surgery is completed, what does it look like down the road? Not in regards to weight loss, but in follow-up visits, maybe another surgery. Like sometimes people get a hip replaced, they need to have that redone again in 15 to 20 years. How does that work with bariatric surgery?
Well, so I'm of the belief that if once you have bariatric surgery, as long as you have the proper lifelong habits and follow-up and care, you can continue to maintain your weight at the level that you desire and try to prevent any type of major weight gain. There's always going to be people who gain their weight for various reasons, the most common being that they've stopped, quote-unquote, following the rules. In terms of long-term follow-up, at least for my practice, the way that we've decided to do it is to have lifelong follow-up with our patients. So okay. I tell my patients that as long as I'm here in Edison, New Jersey, and as long as I have a bariatric practice, and as long as you're physically here, we will continue to follow up with you lifelong to make sure that you're continuing to do the things you need to do from a dietary perspective. You know, immediately after surgery, I have a number of close, concentrated appointments with the nutritionist and with us to make sure they get off on the right track, and then we space those out a little bit as time goes on, and that's sort of it. That's how we kind of do it. Now, not every patient makes it to every appointment. Some patients do gain some of their weight back, but you know, you sort of have to continue to have the follow up to make sure that you can get them out of those situations.
Dr. Aziz Merchant, professor of surgery, bariatric surgeon, Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center in Edison. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joel. I appreciate the opportunity. Have a good day.
For more information, go to jfkmc.org, or for a podcast of the show, go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. JFK Spotlight on Health is brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. We'll talk again next week.